Let's do this, the Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal. I'm here today with my friend, Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David. How are you tonight?
I'm really good, Bruce. You know, it's one of those good Oiler nights when the team really puts you in a good mood. And what can I say? The Oilers, they're rolling. You know, I had hoped that a coaching change would lead to the team playing better. And I have to say, I didn't expect this kind of success, but it's good to see. And the last two games in particular give me a lot of confidence in this team. And that was a tough, you know, losing Klefbom and Russell in Winnipeg, and then able to get a loser point out of that game. And then coming back-to-back games, coming back, Philly's rested. They just, you know, they got every reason. It's a team that in the past, this kind of game gave the Oilers. And when I say the past, I say the last year and a quarter with McClellan. This is the kind of game the Oilers lost consistently. And they just came out there, and I thought they were much better than the Flyers on, like, between Koskinen and the goal-scoring finesse of some of the Oilers players were much better. So, Bruce, this is the two good things, two bad things, and two numbers podcast. What is your good thing?
Well, I think I'm going to give credit just – to the team as a whole, everybody doing their job. You know, you got the big man in nets there, Koskinen. You know, 32 shots, 31 saves. Another real solid effort for him tonight, despite the fact that his goals, his save percentage at home actually dropped tonight. It went from 9.9697 all the way down to 0.9696 after he only did 0.9.
You know, all the smart guys would tell us that's not sustainable, 0.97.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, he's dropping. He's dropping like a stone. He lost a ten thousandth of a point tonight. So, anyway, he did his job. Obviously, the big scorers did theirs, 3 points apiece for McDavid and Draisaitl. Yet another goal for the immortal Alex Chiasson, who is the Fernando Pisani of the 2018-19 Edmonton Oilers with 14 goals now. Career high in mid-December, and this after he didn't even play to open the season. I don't think he played in the first five games at all. It wasn't until injury struck that he even got into the lineup. So he's only played, 28 games, and he's got 14 goals? Poof.
I really like the... In terms of the whole roster, I really like the tweak that the coach made with the third and the fourth lines. It's hard to know which is the third and the fourth. They played about equal time. But Reeder, in terms of having a forechecking line, I think Reeder is much more able to cycle the puck and keep that forecheck going with Cassian and Brodziak than Lucic is. Whereas Lucic might add a little bit of size and strength and toughness to Spooner with Spooner and Cajula out there that might, you know, might help that group of players. So. And I do think that is the fourth line. I think they'll use kind of Brodziak, Cassian, and Reeder. And that strikes me. The identity line always had me a little bit nervous. But now with Reeder there, I think that's a line that could really check other teams' top lines and play some tough minutes and really be effective for the Oilers. With the fourth line, maybe able to help out with the odd point or goal now and then. So, yeah, I agree with you, Bruce. That was an excellent
And, yeah, team. I mean, the depth players did the depth things. They just sort of kept it simple, kept playing mostly low-event hockey, kept the puck moving forward or at least scrambling it along the boards and not giving up a ton. And, you know, it was a team – like, I honestly, David, I thought this game was going to suck. I thought Edmonton was going to lose. I thought it was just going to be one of those games that left everybody angry at the team. And I was already thinking, you know, it's just, you know, the schedule stacked against them. We talked about this last night with my bad thing about how Philly was here resting up, getting ready to play the Oilers while the Oilers were getting manhandled by the big, bad Winnipeg Jets. And yet the Oil came home and they managed to find a way. It was not a pretty game by any stretch of the imagination, but you know what? They're not all pretty. You got to find a way to win those lunch pail games, and they found a way to win this one 4-1.
Yeah, it was not pretty. 7-7 on grade A scoring chances, I had it. And I counted McDavid's incredible shot as a grade A chance because I thought that was intentional, and it was off someone in the crease. It went off the goalie in the crease, so that's our definition.
That was so nearly my, Good thing, David, that goal by McDavid. He did that in junior so often. I was just thinking about this the other day, thinking, why doesn't he get the goals in the NHL he used to get in junior, where he take advantage of the chaos and he just bank one in off of the goalie or defender? He did it constantly. And it's just a matter of time before he's going to get the odd one. Like, NHL teams are pretty good at sealing up that net front, but McDavid's pretty good also.
My good thing, Bruce, was the Bakersfield boys. So there's, I think, if I'm not mistaken, there's three players on the team who have spent time in Bakersfield this year. Jesse Puljujärvi, Kevin Gravel, and Caleb Jones. And I thought that was Puljujärvi's best game since coming back from the AHL. Got a nice shot on net. He was effective on the forecheck. He just seemed more comfortable out there. And, you know, I think it's taken a while for him to get his confidence back at the NHL level. I think it really took a beating. And it's because I do remember him playing better and being less tentative than he's looked in the NHL this season. And this game really showed it. I thought he was effective. Kevin Gravel, he's kind of been amazing. It's too strong a word. But amazing, like in the more limited role that he has, the guy's getting it done. He's like a big Chris Russell out there, rangy, not great with the puck, but rangy, fast enough, and as Hitchcock put it, keeps the play in front of him. He's a fundamentally sound defensive hockey player, and that goes a long way. Now, Caleb Jones, Bruce, that really made my heart happy. To see him play so well. A player who can skate, who can move the puck. This is exactly what the Oilers need on defense. And I understand that Bob Nicholson, the Oilers president, said today, he told the Athletic writer that if the Oilers make the playoffs, Shirelli's going to keep his job. And that's going to make a lot of people upset.
Oh, it already has.
But the one argument in favor of that is the fact that, well, other than signing Mikko Koskinen, there's your cat, eh?
Yeah, hang on. You carry on.
I'll carry on. Other than signing, you know, the huge signing of the year, a job-saving signing in Mikko Koskinen, Shirelli has successfully stocked the farm system with players like Caleb Jones, Tyler Benson, Cooper Marody, and Ethan Bear, and the GM, don't worry about your cat. The GM gets credit for that. And Caleb Jones,
he doesn't. Not in some quarters.
Oh, well, whatever. I mean, some people are just.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's my point, is that it wouldn't, like, the Oilers are 8-1-1 in the last 10. Fire the GM.
Like at some point, I ignore the noise. Like, it's just noise. Like, there's people. If you can't think of anything good that the GM's ever done, sure, he's done some terrible things, and I would have been okay if he had been fired.
Yep,
Milan Lucic signing was a mess. It's a total.
Yeah, there's lots of things.
The Reinhardt trade. But let's not go on. We don't have to adjudicate this. But
again, yes,
these Bakersfield, there is talent down there, Bruce. Mm-hmm. And Caleb Jones came up and looked all the world like a player with an NHL future tonight, and I just found that really heartening.
Yeah, well, he's getting the opportunity down there in his second year of pro. They've been using him on right defense all year. He played with Caleb Jones he played with Kevin Gravel when Gravel started the season down there, and even then they had Gravel on the left, Jones on the right. And I personally, I love watching these guys come up through the ranks, you know, that and I have a particular soft spot from the boys from the Dub, and I know that that'll get me grief in some quarters, but because some people think the Oilers have too much of a soft spot for the boys from the Dub, but mine is more of a personal thing. Those are the fellows I got to see them play when they were 18-19 year old kids, that right after they were drafted. I interviewed Caleb Jones the one time he played in Edmonton after he got drafted. And we had an extensive part of that conversation was specifically about that very thing, playing right defense as a left-hand shot. And he talked about the various challenges in different zones And he also said, I know how many lefties there are on the Oilers organization, so it's a real nice tool to have in my bag if I can do it. And here he is, called up, very first game he's playing right defense on his off wing, and looked all right.
Well, you know, maybe they're taking the right guys from the Dub now. Like before, they were taking the power forward types. They're trying to hit a home run with these big power forwards, you know. And Pitlick came close, but Meraz was a washout. Hamilton never worked out. Awanek never worked out. But now, and Griffin Reinhart was the last of that kind of battleship class player that didn't work out and really, you know, was a, from that group. But since then, it's been Bear, Jones, Benson, players who can, and he big, players who can move and with some talent. So maybe they it just seems Yamamoto. So they're going for the skill players from the Western Hockey League. And maybe they're going to strike a rich Bruce on a couple of these players. And, you know, Skinner, go ahead.
At this moment, they have zero active players in the Dub. All those guys have graduated. So the Dub is a slightly less interesting league from a prospect development standpoint this year. But as you say, there's a number of them down there in the in Bakersfield, and Caleb Jones is one of them. And he's a guy, I mean, he grabbed our attention right from the beginning of training camp this year as a guy that was really ready to make a big step. And here he is in the NHL. Congrats to him.
What's your bad thing, Bruce?
Oh, I'm going to have to go with the Philadelphia Flyers. You know, I'm not sure what's going on there. Like, I really expected them to be, like, totally pissed off at the game that they lost in Calgary the other night when they had a two-goal lead with 70 seconds to play and managed to lose it in a horrible 105 seconds. It went from a two-goal lead to game over lost, three goals against in that time. And I thought they'd come out loaded for bear, that they'd be snarly, that they'd be, you know, just playing nasty, playing hard, and sort of trying to make up for that mistake by taking it to the tired Oilers. They had some moments, but I never really got the sense that the commitment was there. And I wonder if that's a team that we're soon going to be seeing a change in coaches quite
often. Oh, that's the fire the coach kind of game, isn't it, Bruce? Yeah. That was a 2013-2015 Oilers decade of darkness kind of performance from the Flyers, with team with some talent but no heart, no real pushback. I never felt the game. Of course, I knew the score before I watched the game because I was coaching a hockey practice. Right. So I never felt the game was in doubt, but I knew it wasn't in doubt. But it didn't feel like it was in doubt ever, really. The Oilers just seemed to be the better team. So my bad thing, Bruce, is going to be the one goal against, and man, almost every player on the ice, except for Nurse, I think, made a kind of a really horrendous mistake or two. Starting with Draisaitl's turnover in the neutral zone. Come on. Then Larson is joining the rush at, you know, 3-0. He gets caught out. And then the owners is the Philly starts milling around the offensive end. McDavid loses a battle, and then he fails to cover. Chiasson fails to cover the shot. Larson loses a battle behind the net.
Can't ice it. McDavid can't find it in his skates. There was just a whole sequence of pain that seemed. I started at sort of normal value. Get it out of here. And by about the fourth, get it out of here, I was starting to get loud. And then when the puck went in the net, I won't repeat for this podcast what I said at that moment, but I was not happy because I sat through two third periods this week that were just agonizing because the puck was in Edmonton's end the whole time. Like, there's only one way to let Philly back in this game, and I start doing that crap again. But they and up till then, I have to say, the first 10 of the third period, Oilers were real good. And they had a number of shifts deep in Philly zone, the kind of stuff they weren't doing in Colorado or certainly not Winnipeg. And then they started falling back a little bit. And, I mean, the turnover you mentioned, Draisaitl, that's a cute kind of play that he usually gets through to McDavid, but that was the play in the situation in the game, 10 minutes left, 3-goal lead. You play the wall pass to him, and you let McDavid skate onto him. If it doesn't get to him, it's not a turnover with the puck pouring back in over your own blue line the way it worked out. And that was the beginning of the one goal against. But if we give up one in a game and that's our bad thing, well.
You know, early in the third, I thought that's when the change in the lineup had really paid off, because Reeder in that line was really forechecking, and the Spooner line was really forechecking as well. So everything was going well. It seems, you know, I think maybe Hitch changed things up because the identity and identity line had not been forechecking the last few games. They had been behind the eight ball for the last two or three games, I thought.
And well, he changed that twice this week because he put Kara on with Brodziak and Cassian in Colorado. Then he put Lucic back with them in Winnipeg. And then tonight he put Reeder with them. And so he's moving pieces around, I think partly based on the opposition. And I think you're probably bang on tonight with your, you know, the fact there's a lot of big fellows on the one line and three pretty average to small guys on the next line. And he wanted to get a little more heaviness on the Spooner Kajula line. And so just making that switch. And Reeder, I thought Reeder was really excellent tonight.
He's a good hockey player. I know he hasn't scored a goal. But I like him. I like his play. I've liked his play all year long. So, Bruce, what's your number?
Oh, my number is I'm going to go with 48 and 42. That's the number of points scored by Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl through 33 games. So it's basically 40% of the season. So after 40%, if you've got 40 points, you're on pace for 100. And both guys are north of the 40-point mark. And, in fact, in the 13 games since Ken Hitchcock took over, McDavid has 20 points and Draisaitl 19. So that's basically 1.5 points per game for both guys. And, you know, that's a small span, but not that small, 13 games. When you're talking about 20 points in 13 games, that's real production. And the big thing is that after the slow start for Leon, he's been step for step with McDavid on the points front for basically November, first half of December, they're dead heat.
So yeah, sweet. Absolutely sweet. And I have always been against those two guys together, but mainly last year because they just didn't put up the points. I mean, that was a big part of it. And I think in the playoffs, still thinking the playoffs, you're going to have to split them up. But the idea was, the argument for putting them together is this is how you can win games in the regular season. Just didn't work, Bruce, last year at all, not even close, because they didn't put up the points together, except for 3-on-3 overtime and not on the power play even. So they're doing it. They're getting it done. And, hey, I'm all in favor of things that work. So somehow Hitch has a way, has figured out. I don't know if it's just Hitch or maybe it's these two players just being completely healthy. Who knows what it is, Bruce, but they're performing at a level that they didn't perform under when McLellan was the coach for when they were together all last year and early this year. So I don't know what's gone different, but it's nice. It's fantastic to see.
Yeah. Well, Leon has now 12 points in his last five games and you have, but the team has got 22 goals in those five games. So that means not only are he and McDavid hot, but the other lines are consistently scoring one or two goals a game, a couple goals per game on average. I mean, 22 goals in five games, that's excellent production. That includes a 1-0 win. And the rest of the games, they've had 4-plus goals in each game. So the offense is coming around finally after a painful long stretch where it seemed like there was nobody below the top three that could score at all.
Yeah, Draisaitl's looking good. He and mandatory 1970 sports reference, he's reminding me of Big Ned. Bruce, my number is 8-1-1, That's the Oilers' record in the last 10 games. And it's the hottest record in the West, second hottest in the NHL after Tampa Bay, 9-1. And I've been kind of on the fence, like wondering, like, you know, under McLellan, the Oilers were out-chancing the other team in terms of grade-A chances. And in Hitch, it's been tight. They've been about even every game like they were tonight. But and the main difference seems to be is that By now, and McLellan might have done the same thing, but Hitch has gone with a better goalie, Koskinen, over Talbot, and that's paid huge dividends for the Oilers in this time period. But he's also done a good job of balancing the two goaltenders in a way that McLellan rarely did, and both goalies are going now. So that's, I think, the biggest obvious difference. But Hitch has got this. He's got all these players just playing that much better. Each one of them just a little bit better, getting a little bit more out of each guy, a little bit more coherence in terms of the line combinations. And that's what it takes to win. The Oilers were close to winning. I mean, under McLellan, they were 9-11. They weren't horrible, but they were trending down. and looking like they were going to get worse. No one saw this coming. This kind of and if it's partly puck luck, great. Like, thank goodness the Oilers are getting some puck luck. And if it's partly hot goaltending, fabulous. Like, about time. Mm-hmm. It's almost like we've forgotten what good goaltending, hot goaltending looks like in Edmonton. And no one can really get their head around. This is how teams win hockey games in the NHL. They get a hot goalie and they ride them. So 8-1-1, Bruce, man, that is fan-fracking-tastic. And good for Ken Hitchcock getting the most out of this team. And let's, fingers crossed, he can do it. But I'm starting to believe. The faithful are starting to believe again.
Yeah, well, he's a couple of players that really stood out to me that have picked up the game since Hitch took over. Jujhar Kara and Kyle Brodziak, who's, yeah, to my eyes, been a revelation this last while and taken on a pretty big role. Tonight he only played 14 minutes, 35 seconds. But time on the penalty kill, the best man in the face-off circle. And the penalty kill is a big part of this win tonight, by the way. And he's starting to deliver what they were hoping for when they signed him. You know, I mean, at $1.15 million, you don't expect this guy to be pumping pucks into the net every game, but you just don't want him getting burned. And a game where he has no points and even plus minus and helps out on the penalty kill, that's a good game for a depth player. And we're seeing way more of that out of him and even a little bit of offense here once in a while.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's to think about the difference, because McClellan's a good coach, and maybe they just needed someone, the same message from a different guy. I don't know. But anyway, it's working. Bruce, let's leave it there. You got to work on the game grades.
Yeah, I got to finish up the grades. All right.
So thanks for talking tonight.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.